This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. Neil Conan's away. It's been almost 4 weeks since Republican Louisiana Senator David Vitter publicly apologized for what he called a serious sin. Vitter admitted using the escort services of Deborah Jean Palfrey, a.k.a. the D.C. Madam. For now, Vitter plans to remain in office, where he's been a strong supporter of the Marital Protection Amendment that would constitutionally ban gay marriage. The case is reminiscent of another story involving a Louisiana politician, the one Vitter replaced in the House. In 1998, Congressman Robert Livingston resigned after admitting to extramarital affairs. Like Vitter, Livingston was a family values conservative, and like Vitter, his adulterous activity was exposed by investigative reporters working for Hustler publisher Larry Flynt. One of those reporters joins us in a minute, but first we want to hear from you. Where is the line between public and private lives? Does the line move when hypocrisy is added to the mix? Give us a call. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now here in Studio 3A is Dan Mulday. He's the author of many books, including The Hoffa Wars, Teamsters, Rebels, and Politicians and the Mob, and Dark Victory, Ronald Reagan, MCA, and the Mob. He also works with Larry Flynt investigating the private lives of politicians. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Also with us is Eric Desenhall. He's CEO of Desenhall Resources, a crisis management firm here in Washington. His latest book is Damage Control, Why Everything You Know About Crisis Management is Wrong. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Dan Mulday, let's start with you. Tell us about your role in the Senator Vitter story.
Basically, I'm a grunt crime reporter. As you said, I've written several books mostly on organized crime. That's my thing. But Larry Flynt goes into these crusades against political hypocrisy, where you have politicians who have conflicting standards of private behavior for public officials, one for them and another for everybody else. And during the Clinton impeachment period of time, we saw that Bill Clinton was receiving absolutely no mercy whatsoever from the Republicans. And so Flynt put together a project to go after Republican hypocrites who were guilty of the same kind of behavior. I was the investigator who was responsible for the investigation of Bob Livingston, the speaker designate who resigned on the day of the impeachment. And then he brought me back as a lead investigator for this particular incarnation. I got the Washington Madam's phone records earlier. While I was going through the phone records, I found David Vitter's name. I did a background check. I reported to Larry. And I think Larry has basically said that he's tired of dealing with these moral hypocrites, and he is determined that he is going to be a legitimate arbiter on this process of hypocrisy in politics in America.
I can see why Larry Flynt does it in the position he's in. Why do you do it?
I was radicalized, I think, by the Clinton impeachment effort. I thought it was so incredibly unfair what was happening to Bill Clinton. As I say, he was shown absolutely no mercy whatsoever. I had written a book on the Vince Foster suicide, the White House counsel who went out to Fort Marcy Park and who sat on the side of a hill and put a .38 in his mouth and pulled the trigger. And I saw how the coverage of that case by certain right-wing journalists who were sharing information, receiving funding from the same source, was a cynical attempt to try to undermine the Clintons and their authority in the White House by claiming that they had murdered Vince Foster, by claiming that they are somehow involved in the cover-up of his death. When I found that there really was nothing more than a right-wing conspiracy, let's say, to make it look that way. When Hillary Clinton was talking about the right-wing conspiracy against the Clinton White House, she was telling the truth.
Eric Desenhall, let's bring you into this. Do you think the hypocrisy Dan Mulday talks about, the sort of setting yourself up as the nation's moral guardian and then participating in this behavior, justifies these kinds of investigations?
You know, regrettably it does, and I'm sort of an unlikely source on that. I got my start in Washington as a 21-year-old in Ronald Reagan's White House, and I think that these moral issues, I think that it's a legitimate issue. I mean, I have a 14-year-old daughter. I'm worried about Lindsay Lohan and Britney Spears, and I don't think it's illegitimate for there to be a discussion about sexual morality. Regrettably, though, you cannot, if you're going to take a public position about family values and sexual morality, you can't be going to prostitutes. And hypocrisy is distressing to Americans for two reasons. One, it sets off our alarm bells. It says, I don't trust you. You're lying to me. On a Darwinian level, we react to hypocrisy because it makes me scared of you. I can't trust you. And second, Americans are very class conscious. We're very conscious about somebody saying, I'm smarter than you are. And that's not a liberal or conservative thing. So when you have Vitter being a family values Republican and then getting caught with a prostitute, it's a problem. By the same token, on the left, when you have Hollywood environmentalists preaching conservation, but they live in 20,000 square foot houses, that's a problem too.
So do you think this sort of being bothered by hypocrisy, even being outraged by hypocrisy, is a uniquely American thing?
I don't know that it's, I mean, it's uniquely American, but I think that there is an American undercurrent because you don't find many countries where people run for office on family values. And I also think that we're just hypersensitive to anybody who is sending a signal, I can do things that you can't do. I, Barbara Streisand, can live in a 20,000 square foot house, but you, little person, cannot. And I think the same holds true for family values Republicans, even if it hurts people I tend to be more sympathetic with.
And Daniel Day, we should clarify that during your initial investigations for the Clinton impeachment, you said publicly that there was dirt you had dug up that you wouldn't release because it was on people who had not positioned themselves on this moral high ground.
No, one of the reasons why I'm loyal to Larry, especially when he gets involved in these things, is he's shown considerable restraint and compassion. I could tell you a number of stories where we had people nailed, and Larry decided that they weren't guilty of hypocrisy, and thus we threw them back in the river. I mean, essentially with
And
did
you investigate any Democrats at all, or was this specifically about the Republicans?
No, of course we did. We had a number. We let a number of Republicans. I can think of two senators off the top of my head who we let go because they weren't going on TV shooting off their mouth about the immoral behavior, let's say, of Bill Clinton, or the reprehensible behavior during in the midst of the impeachment battle. We let him go. There were two Democrats who were jumping on that bandwagon, and we investigated them as well. But bottom line, what we're trying to do here is we're trying to say that if you're going to take the moral high ground, as Eric just discussed, you know, you're basically putting a target on your back, and you're making yourself vulnerable to people like Larry Flynt.
Let's hear from Bill in Grenville, North Carolina. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Oh, thank you. I had just called because it seems to me that for many years, politicians have been in the business of marketing themselves as being the holders of values that ought to be emulated. That's the bulk of their political campaigns. And people in entertainment do so, asking people to go to their movies, buy their records on the basis of their sometimes wholesome character. And now when this information comes up, we have, in fact, truth in labeling.
And so, Bill, what do you think the consequences of that should be?
Well, I would like to know what's in the package. So if someone comes to me and says, vote for me for senator, vote for me for president, I hold these values, I want to see the label on the back of the bottle telling me exactly what that person is made up as.
Well, thanks for your call. Of course, one of the things this brings up is that no politician exists in a vacuum, that when you expose these things about his or her, well, it's almost always a his life, you know, there's collateral damage. They have a family, often have children. There are other people who are hurt by this.
Well, there's no joy. Honestly, there is absolutely no joy when something like this happens. We had no joy for what Mrs. Vitter, let's say, went through during that horrific press conference where he used her in that position. And we felt, how can we feel any joy over something like that, where her husband's a Harvard magna, a Rhodes Scholar, is stupid enough to call an escort service from his home phone and does it five times? You know, again, there's no joy from something like that.
And Eric, from the standpoint of a political strategy, does this work? Does nailing someone on this sort of hypocrisy work?
Absolutely. I mean,
it doesn't backfire?
I don't think so, because, you know, on a pure clinical level, and I come at this not ideologically but clinically, I find it very hard to defend someone who is accused of hypocrisy. It's one of those issues that is so, I mean, we don't process narratives on facts. We process things viscerally. And hypocrisy, next to possibly racism, is one of those radioactive things that, as someone who makes his living sending bills to people for helping get companies and individuals out of problems, I haven't found much success in defending it other than going the route of apology. You can't come out and spin your hypocrisy. Well, here's the reason why everything I told you isn't really true. It's a very hard thing to do.
Or doesn't apply to me.
Or doesn't apply to me because God chose me and I'm better. That's not a very easy
doesn't
sell.
Tend to go over
but
well with Pratt.
But there's also the situation where you have public figures such as anti-drug Rush Limbaugh, who turns out to be an alleged junkie, where you have anti-gambling Bill Bennett, who turns out to be a degenerate gambler, allegedly, where you have Mr. Morality, Bill O'Reilly, talking about what he talks about on his show, and yes, he allegedly pays off a woman for her silence, whom he sexually harassed, who was in his employ. But still, the people who support Bill O'Reilly, Rush Limbaugh, and Bill Bennett will be in a position where they'll forgive them because they have their own conflicting standards of private behavior for public official, one for those politicians and public figures they like, and another for those they don't like. And so they'll forgive the Bill O'Reillys, the Rush Limbaughs, the Bill Bennetts, where they will not forgive someone like Bill Clinton.
Yeah, and my theory is the reason why hypocrisy is so radioactive is it validates everything you don't like about someone. If you are don't like Hollywood liberals and you find out that Alec Baldwin supports both animal rights and breast cancer research, it says, you see, these liberals, it validates that. And if you don't think conservatives are very nice people, what this does is it allows you to hang on the wall and say, you see, this is the reason why I don't trust these people.
We're talking about private sins. Should they stay private when they're committed by a public servant? We're also taking your calls, 800-989-TALK, or send email. The address is talk@npr.org. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Rebecca Roberts in Washington. We're talking about the delicate balance of private lives and public service this hour. Does hypocrisy tip the scales? My guests are Dan Mulday. He works with Larry Flint investigating the private lives of politicians, as well as Eric Desenhall. He's the CEO of Desenhall Resources, a firm that manages the crises that Dan's investigations create. A little later in the hour, we'll be talking about the bridge collapse in Minnesota, where a massive recovery effort is underway. We'd like to hear from our listeners in Minneapolis. You can write us email, talk@npr.org. Eric, a little bit before the break, we were talking about how you advise clients who are in this situation. What do you tell them? Suppose they've had this pretty obvious sort of lapse of judgment exposed.
It depends on what the baseline expectation is of them to begin with. A vitter, you know, who's not a client, would be a real problem because of the hypocrisy issue we discussed. I have worked with chief executives who have had moral issues, affairs and things like that raised. And the attack we take is really quite hard-nosed, which is when the media call and say, we have a right to know, we say, no, you don't. And they can hammer and they can press and they could scream about right to know and shareholder this and shareholder that. And unless we're talking about someone who has, let's say, used a corporate jet to ferry prostitutes around the world, which is a different story, that can be shut down rather quickly. And what you have is a personal problem. I mean, if you look at currently what's happening, what happened a few years ago with Kobe Bryant, who retained, despite the rape allegations, many of his contracts and things like that. The baseline understanding is, as politically incorrect as what I'm about to say is, we expect NBA stars to get involved with sexual mischief. And even if we're talking about a serious charge like rape, there is an unspoken understanding in the culture that a young woman should not be going up to an NBA star's room and whatever happens, happens, and she's not going to be accorded the same type of leeway that someone else might be. Whereas with a Michael Vick, the quarterback, an animal abuse situation, you're dealing...
He's lost all his endorsements.
You can't spin it. It's so exotic that there's no way you can say, well, look, who among us hasn't electrocuted a dog? I mean...
So is the key word there expect? I mean, if you expect Kobe Bryant to be, you know, a little popular with the ladies, but you don't expect Michael Vick to do, you know, gruesome things to dogs. Do you not expect a politician to be calling an escort service? But for instance, the allegations that Al Gore's 10,000 square foot house in Tennessee wasn't very green didn't seem to stick to him. So maybe you expect a politician to live rich.
Well, I can't quite yet explain the 10,000 square foot Al Gore thing. It seems to have worked better with Hollywood famous people than it does a politician. But for example, Clinton, and Dan may have a different view of this, I always felt that one of the reasons I wrote an op-ed the first week of the Lewinsky scandal when everybody was saying that Clinton was going to go down. I wrote an op-ed saying he would survive it. And Geraldo Rivera had me on the show and said, why are you the only spin doctor lunatic who thinks he's going to survive? And I made the remark, Clinton's going to get away with it for the same reason why beautiful women don't get speeding tickets. He's a guy who we sort of knew, or we didn't sort of know, we totally knew when we elected him what he was. And there wasn't this hypocrisy. There wasn't this sense that he was fooling everybody. It was sort of built into the stock price, so to speak. Whereas, you know, if I, God only knows, if Ronald Reagan had been accused of infidelity, I don't know what we would have done.
Demel Day?
I want to ask Eric. So your advice to people who get into trouble like this is don't get ahead of it. Like Vitter, I was online and then I was talking to somebody, a friend of mine, a journalist, and I said, Jesus, he's just confessed. And he went to the AP and he did his my God has forgiven me, my wife has forgiven me thing. But that's not your advice, is to get ahead of these things.
Well, it can be. I mean, every situation is different. I think with a Vitter, what I would have said to him is, tell me what could conceivably come out. And if my sense was that it was absolutely a repeated history of this type of behavior, there's something to be said for what forest rangers call controlled burning, light the fire yourself. But if there's really...
Which the Clinton administration was wonderful at doing, getting ahead of a story like that and getting it out to, for damage control purposes.
I think, and you know, to that end, the Reagan administration had sort of an intuitive sense of that. I mean, when Reagan would make some remark like 99% of pollution is caused by trees and our phones would light up, you know, people wanted to know, what's the spin? What's the spin? The spin was, he says stuff like that. And so it was perfectly consistent with what people knew about him.
Let's hear from Eric in Boise. Eric, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thanks for taking my call, Renee. Good day, gentlemen.
Good day.
I'm considering a run for Congress, and I, of course, as anyone, has some skeletons in my closet. I was going to put them right out front at the day I announced, say, yep, I've done this and this. I've smoked a truckload of grass, you know.
You better hire Eric to help you do that, though.
I'm wondering what the pitfalls of filling my enemy's quiver with arrows right out of the gates are.
Eric doesn't know?
Well, I think that the rules have changed. I mean, there was once a time where a Supreme Court Justice, nominee Ginsburg, went down for smoking pot. I just don't think that that works anymore, nor do I believe that politicians are necessarily finished for having marital problems. I don't think it sounds like, from what you're saying, you have a profoundly serious situation. Now, the extent to which I would be running around advertising this, I wouldn't do. But I think that one of the things that take a page from President Bush, you know, what he chose to do was he never denied being a party guy. And so he sort of admitted on the macro level certain things, but he never did what some of the damage control types said, that he should come out and say, yes, I used cocaine. I was of the position he should not do that because it would have given his enemies too much ammunition. But to generally say, yeah, I grew up in the 60s or the 70s. And
so should Eric in Idaho, should he come out now and confess his sins before he makes his run for office, or should he wait to be exposed by people like me?
I think it depends on how serious his, I mean, if we're talking about that he has a conviction of some kind, I think it should come out. But I don't see in this day and age the merits of running around saying, yeah, I smoked pot and stuff like that.
I got to tell you, one of the things that's really dragged me into this thing was the fact that we had received information that an unnamed group of former intelligence officers are getting ready to launch a smear campaign against Bill and Hillary Clinton in this effort to try to divert Hillary Clinton's efforts to run for president. And once again, this is a smear campaign, not unlike the Swift Boat Veterans campaign against John Kerry during the 2004 presidential campaign, where they took a legitimate war hero and tried to portray him as a coward in combat. So once again, if these people are looking for a showdown on the issue of morality, then by God, Larry Flynt is prepared to give them that showdown.
Let's hear from Mike in St. Simon's Island. Mike, welcome to Talk the Nation.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I had a thought. Sometimes I'm in the position with my children where I have to say, don't do as I do as I say, or don't. And by analogy, I was wondering if some politicians may genuinely believe that a particular moral standard is best for the country or best for our society, yet they themselves have not lived up to that standard.
Mike, thanks for your call. Dan Mulday?
I think I'm going to yield to Eric on this. Go ahead.
You know, having represented a lot of people ranging from mostly corporate people but to celebrities, one of the biggest problems is when a person is catapulted into the realm of mega success, they begin to believe they've been chosen by God. And they truly believe that there are different standards. And I think that that is also what gets them into trouble, because they are surrounded by sycophants who will essentially enable and validate the notion that they're special. And, you know, the problem is these people have folks around them who will be putting out smoke detectors until they get a five alarm. And so what you see is these people push it and push it and push it, until it's too late.
Which would explain the sort of maybe disproportionately high level of these stories among preachers.
I think that's right. I mean, when life experience has taught you, I mean, one of my favorite cliches is, oh, so-and-so, they think they can get away with this stuff. They don't think they can get away with this stuff. They do get away with this stuff until they don't.
Let's hear from Jerry in St. Charles, Missouri. Jerry, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you very much.
Sure.
I do believe that any activity between consenting adults is a private matter, even if one or both of the people involved are public figures. However, I think someone does forfeit that right if they want to make comments on some other consenting adult's activities.
And, amen, brother. Yeah.
And I also want to say to the person there representing Mr. Flynt that I think a lot of people are looking down their nose at this being done by Hustler magazine, but
hey, we deserve your criticism, so bring it on. Go ahead.
The so-called legitimate press has let this go and is, I think, part of the hypocrisy. And I say to Mr. Flynt that get in there and someone has to expose it. So.
Well, right now we're trying to slow play all of this, and I think that's our aim right now.
What do you mean by slow play?
Well, you know, I don't want us to appear to be a bunch of terrorists who are going to kill a hostage a week until they, you know, let up on the Clintons. But and I should say, the White House back then during the impeachment had nothing to do with us, nor would they want to have anything to do with us, nor do the Clinton people have anything to do with us, nor would they want to have anything to do with us now. This is a personal feeling that I have on my part. Again, I'm a grunt crime reporter. That's what I do for the rest of my time. I'm really an objective journalist. But when it comes to this matter, the issue of political hypocrisy, and when Larry goes on his crusades to do something like this, I just can't resist joining him in that effort. I might also add that there was once this Washington where people could fight like cats and dogs during the day and be friendly and even friends in repose. And Eric, I was a big fan of Eric's first book, Nail 'Em. And I said, this is the kind of guy I like to get to know. It was an extraordinary book that he wrote. And then I wound up investigating Eric. While I was doing some consulting work, I ended up investigating Eric, and I found out how good he is. And then eventually we became friends. He and I disagree on like nothing politically, but still we are friendly and we are friends in repose. And that's the old Washington, which I'd like to see come back.
We have an email from Elizabeth in New Orleans who says, I'm in New Orleans. The reason that I'm disgusted with David Vitter is that he was so public in banning comprehensive sex education for youth. I don't really care that he paid women for sex. I care that his ideology harmed youth. Go ahead if you're an adult and live a frustrated sexual life, but don't inflict it on young people by refusing them access to accurate information. This, I think, is getting to the it confirms people you already disliked theory.
I think very much. And, you know, as much as, I mean, you can't ignore the fact that a lot of this is anchored in policy. I mean, why did women who would be the likely people to rail against sexual harassment of any kind, I mean, post Clarence Thomas, why would they be the ones to rally behind Bill Clinton? What a lot of it came down to, they liked him and they liked his agenda. And when you don't like someone's agenda and they are caught doing something that provides them a political vulnerability and shows hypocrisy, it's pounced on.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Which might be sort of a fine line for you, Dan Mulday, if you've decided to get into this business for political reasons, that you, as you say, got radicalized when you felt that the right was being unfair to the Clintons. What if you uncovered something that made you feel bad about people whose politics you think are really important?
You know, then that's a choice I'd have to make. It would be, as Eric says, it depends. It depends on the case. I have a story that we're shopping right now with my partner, David Korn, the Washington editor of The Nation, which the target is a major Democratic leader. It's a mob story. To me, it's a great story. There's a Democratic leader who's mobbed up, and we've written this story, and we are looking forward to exposing the facts of this case.
I think we have time for one more call. This is Diana in East Lansing, Michigan. Diana, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you. I just wondered if your guests could comment on what I feel is the hypocrisy regarding Vice President Cheney and not saying anything in the last election regarding gay marriage. And then, you know, he has a daughter that's in a relationship that is now expecting a child. And it always seems when they ask him questions regarding that, he won't comment at all, and you know, he didn't stick up for gay marriage, and he didn't really say anything in the last election. So I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
Diana, thanks for your call. Eric Desenhall.
Well, I have a sort of hard-nosed look at that. I think that when it comes to people's children, they are given a pass. And I don't think despite the fact that I was never a fan of the Clintons, I used to hate it when people would make fun of Chelsea and her appearance when she first came in. To me, it was not fair game. And I think that nobody really expects a parent to be commenting on detail about a child. It's just so seminal. And, you know, even people who
literally.
Exactly. And I just think Cheney got a pass and probably should have.
Do you agree, Demelding?
Totally.
I think we actually do have time for one more call. Jim from Las Vegas.
Hello.
Hi, Jim.
Hi. I actually disagree.
Somebody from Vegas disagrees with us? Go ahead.
On the issue of hypocrisy, I believe that an individual is hypocritical if you portray yourself or something as being a certain way when you're not.
Like David Vitter.
Like David Vitter, I can think that drugs are wrong. I can think prostitution is wrong. And I could consciously decide not to behave in a way where I would not participate in that. In other words, if I'm a preacher, let's just say, and I tell everybody prostitution is wrong, okay? Well, I can truly believe that it's wrong, and I can consciously say, I don't care. I'm still going to pick up prostitutes. I'm still going to use drugs. That's not hypocrisy.
How is that not hypocrisy, Jim?
It's a conscious decision not to act.
I think you've been watching the O'Reilly Factor too much, sir. I think point of view on things.
Hypocrisy is when you portray yourself as being something you're not. It is not believing something and deciding consciously not to act in that way. That's not that you're mixing it up.
Jim, thanks for your call. That seems like a distinction without a difference to me.
I'm going to yield to my conservative friend Eric here.
Well, I come at it again from the perspective that, you know, Dan is a mob reporter. You'll like this. Bugsy Siegel had a saying, we only kill each other. You know, Vitter is not a civilian. He is a warrior in this battle, and therefore it is fair game.
I'd like to thank you both so much for coming in.
Thank you, Rebecca.
Dan Maldea is an investigative reporter. He works with Larry Flynt, exposing the private lives of politicians. Eric Dezenhall runs a crisis management firm here in Washington. They both joined us here in Studio 3A. Coming up, last night's bridge collapse in Minneapolis was one of the worst in more than 20 years. We'd like to hear from you about what you saw. Give us a call if you're one of those who saw it collapse or if you've seen the site of the disaster. The number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Our email address is talk@npr.org. You can also comment on our blog. It's at npr.org/blogofthenation. I'm Rebecca Roberts. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.